This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. Gang back together. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee. Brian Roach from ESPN West Palm. Catch him on ESPN 1000 plus SiriusXM. Jonathan Hood. All right, boys. The wrestling continues to be good as we're bouncing off of All In for AEW as they get ready for Forbidden Door. WWE gearing up for SummerSlam coming up in a week and a half. But where we begin is off of Dynamite last night. And Jon Moxley and is going to get another shot at the AEW World Championship against Hangman Adam Page. That's happening next week in Chicago, as part of the residency that they have at the Aragon Ballroom. So the question is, how does Hangman versus Mox end?
First of all, I got swerved on Wednesday night because my tickets were for Collision on the 31st. I didn't know that they were going to run this back next Wednesday. So immediately I picked up the phone and go, I guess I got to be there for that.
That's a good one to be at.
Yeah, like I was just like, oh, Collision, thanks for coming to Chicago. No, I guess I've got to go.
I mean, I honestly, when they announced that last night, Hood, the first thing I did was look how far Aragon Ballroom is from my house in Milwaukee. It's an hour and a half. So I'm debating. I might show up to see Mox versus Hangman too.
First of all, it's unnecessary. You don't need to hotshot the territory. You don't need this match now. Why are you doing it now? What are you trying to – so, okay, thank God we have it, but there's no need for it. So I'm thinking that Hangman retains because you really want to be able to establish Hangman as the champion. When we saw this on Wednesday night, a dominant victory against
Yuta.
And so it just established him as a champion. So, again, it's a matchup that we look forward to seeing, but not right away. But now it's going to happen. I think we further understand Hangman is the man in AEW after that match.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. Like, we all assumed All In would be the end of the Death Riders, but they're still prevalent. We're still seeing Mox. So maybe this is the end of it. Like, Hangman wins. He's a dominant champ. And then the Death Riders turn on Mox. And then Mox takes a vacation, which is about 3 years too late at this point. Like, Maybe that's what we see next week. Like, it's very odd seeing that. I had it on, and I wasn't, like, fully locked in. And then I hear Hangman say, next week in Chicago. I'm like, huh? Like, I literally rewound, like, that's not right. Like, they're not doing a title match next week. Like, did he screw it up? Did he mean Forbidden Door? But we're 6 days away from another world title match.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because they felt like you said, they don't have to hotshot the territory. But when you're doing these residencies, right, like, you got to make sure people showed up. And they had, I mean, it holds, what, like 1,400? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And they sold out last night. I saw that on WrestleTix on Twitter, that last night was sold out. Crowd was hot. Crowd was great. So I don't know if it's hey, we got to make sure people are showing up toward the end of the residency, or, hey, Chicago, you've been great. Here's a world title match. I don't know the reasoning behind it, but honestly, I kind of liked it last night. The way AEW booked Dynamite in a way that they haven't done in a while, but they've been better at. And something that we've complained about, me in particular, where a lot of times when with AEW, it just feels like, oh, here's this segment, here's this segment. They did a through line just about the entire time last night, where, you know, it starts with MJF confronting Hangman. And then, you know, you have the through line of, well, then MJF is mad at, you know, at the Hurt Business, and the Hurt Business is helping Edge, and MJF is out there later. And you just have all these through lines where it looks like all these different stories are connected. And that's to me how you know you're putting on a really good wrestling show, when you're able to make all these connection points to all these different stories, and then ending with Mox getting the championship. And the way that Hangman is just carrying himself, I love. Like, dressing down MJF, calling him a coward. Yeah, I know, you're trying to goat me into this. I see through you. This is BS. Going out there and dictating and demanding the terms of Mox. And to me, yes, this is going to put an end to it, because we had the schmozzy street fight, death match, all the different things, all the different interferences. Now we're just getting a straight up wrestling match between these two, because everybody's barred from ringside. So to me, it's like, okay, now you get to put him over as a tremendous wrestler as well, because that's what we know Hangman to be. So I agree with you guys. Is this necessary? No. Am I looking forward to it? Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. I'm just surprised it's happening there. It's one of those things where, man, you can put this in front of 5,000 people. People want to see the rematch, but it's fine. It's fine. I'll say this, that I would agree with you that AEW has done a much better job. And Tony Khan is the one patting himself on the back. He's telling you that, like, yeah, I've moved all the clutter out of the way. I'm doing the booking. Like, okay, Mary Horowitz, go ahead. You know, pat yourself on the back. You're the one that's doing it. Whatever, whoever's in charge, whoever's got the pencil, they're doing a great job of being able to tell stories as of late.
My only concern, because we've had this happen in the past, like we see AEW hot, Forbidden Door comes, and all of a sudden it dips a little bit. Are we getting this because Forbidden Door is going to be Hangman versus someone we don't typically see? And then all of a sudden we lose some of that momentum. That's my only concern right now.
So I guess that'll be fine for me. And they did a better job the second time around on Forbidden Door, because they had all these storylines that they basically set to the side. And they're like, hey, we want to incorporate some of these New Japan people in the buildup to it. So it depends upon how they decide to treat Forbidden Door. If they're bringing in a bunch of New Japan people just for one-offs, not great. Honestly, I like the fact that they're building up with this tag team tournament, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, whatever they're going to do with other tag teams, like, you can do one-off matches and do whatever you want to do at Forbidden Door and make it non-necessary viewing for your weekly viewer. And then if you want to see some cool wrestling matches with guys from New Japan who you may or may not have seen before, like, yeah, go ahead and buy this pay-per-view if you just want to see the cool wrestling matches. But as long as you keep the storylines going on Collision and Dynamite, then that's fine. And, you know, I think you can kind of turn Forbidden Door into, I mean, for lack of a better word, a house show, because it's not going to be that, because it's,
right,
you know, it's overseas and the crowd's going to be hot and it's going to be great. But like, I think you just turn it into, hey, we're just going to put on some really good matches here, but we're going to keep telling the key stories that we want to tell for after Forbidden Door, rolling on Collision and Dynamite.
I'm 100% okay with that.
Yeah, that's 100% on point, because we've already done these shows in the past, guys, where we've talked about why is there such a disconnect between what's happening in AEW and what's happening in New Japan. Why put all these New Japan guys in when you're already telling stories on your main show in AEW? So it's a great point. And by the way, from everything that I read, it's kind of cooled off. Not the hot brand it once was. I don't know if it's a booking situation, what it is, but, you know, if you're AEW, it's like, yeah, we'll have some sprinkle of the Japan guys, but ultimately, we got to take care of AEW business.
Well, I think part of that reason is all these stars of New Japan are in AEW. Like, there used to be that appeal, like, oh, I want to see this person, I want to see that person. Like, to me, the biggest person you want to see in New Japan is, like, Gabe Kidd right now. We see him on AEW television. So that's the part where, like, the Forbidden Door stuff sort of loses some of its luster. And I know they're going to work in Progress and some CMLL stuff also. But if they're treating it like, I think a house show is a good phrase, where it's just like, hey, come watch fun wrestling. Like, we see that stuff go viral all the time. But the stories are going to continue beyond that. Because I think it's October is Wrestle Dream. So there's still a month in between the two. Like, keep it rolling. We get a title match next week. It's unexpected, but it's a positive.
Wrestle Dream in St. Louis. Maybe somebody will cover for GKW. That's close enough.
Yeah, well, but also you've got, don't you have All Out in Toronto?
Yeah.
In between there?
In between? Okay.
I believe that's in between.
So, Gabe, you got to cover that. You're closest.
Well, I think we're probably going to get an Edge and Christian reunion at All Out in Toronto. So.
Yeah, you're correct. September 20th is All Out.
Yeah, so you got about a month between the two, but it seems like they're just going to kind of keep cruising, and if they can sprinkle some of that other stuff in with New Japan, cool. Otherwise, yeah, it's just going to be a really good house.
The response from Chicago, so not surprised, but just at the Aragon Ballroom when I was there last Wednesday, just huge pop for Hangman Page. People are so happy that he's a champion. They're so happy that Moxley isn't the champion. Moxley still gets a reaction because he's still roaming through the crowd and all that. So he's always going to get a reaction, but not like Hangman Page. And then we saw on Wednesday night, again, he comes out there, same jacket, same championship. And he still, like, gets this big ovation because people are rooting for him. Think about where we were talking about Hangman Page, the three of us, 6 months ago, 9 months ago, to where he is now as the main character in AEW. It's really incredible.
I think he's finally fulfilling the potential that the Elite talked about when they first formed AEW, right? Like when Cody and the Bucks and Kenny, they're like, man, I think this guy can be like the best of all of us. Yeah, sure, whatever, guys. And then, you know, you could start to see some of that. Then he becomes champion for the first time, and it's like, I don't want to make it seem like his first run as champ was bad, because it wasn't. Like, it was earned, it was good story, it was that. like, to me, he's just on a different level, right? Like, he's everything he did with Swerve kind of graduated both of that. It's Swerve. I think we're going to look back in AEW history as Swerve versus Hangman as something that elevated both of them, which is what you want a feud to do, but also elevated the company because it raised both of them despite being a couple of former world champions. I think both of their games have been raised, and now it just feels different this time around with Hangman as the world champ.
Yeah, I mean, he is the face of the company. He is a guy that you look at and say, like, all right, this is someone that's going to be here for a long time, if not forever. And everything is clicking. And I feel like that AEW history is, hey, we get the chase, everything's great, and then they become champion. It's like, oh, this sort of sucks. I don't see that happening with this title run, which is nice to say.
And he shut down. No. And he shut down MJF early in the broadcast.
Loved it.
Shut him down. I'm like, MJF had no comeback. It just, again, it's about building a champion. We already know he can go in the ring, but as someone, as the leader of the locker room, I just like the way that they're writing this right now.
Even the little stuff with Yuta, where, like, he's like, oh, I could kill you, but, like, hey, look, no one's coming for you, and, like, letting them go, and, like, those little storylines, like, oh, this is clicking.
Yeah.
Well, but again, that's what AEW's been doing. The little things, because, again, those little things add up to the bigger storytelling and give you a better payoff once you hit that payoff. Yep.
So. The things that Hangman is doing that they won't let Cody do.
Right.
It's a baby face with an edge.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the cookie cutter one.
But there are a lot of other things we want to get to today in the world of professional wrestling. We like to call it the three count, the other top three stories. I know we started on a lighter note, but obviously some heavier news to start at number one today.
Yes,
Ryan.
A big story in the wrestling world. TMZ first report this morning, Hulk Hogan dead at the age of 71. So not an easy question, but what is the legacy of Hulk Hogan?
It's a complicated legacy, certainly. And I know there were, again, like, rumors of him not having great health. Jimmy Hart just earlier this week came out and said, hey, no, Hulk's doing fine. Hulk's great. He was the latest one to come out and say Hulk's doing fine. So, unfortunately, Hulk passing away at the age of 71. I mean, is he one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time? Yeah. Like, he goes on that list. I mean, he helped professional wrestling get to where it was, but that's where it becomes complicated, right? Where, you know, and everything he did as Hulk Hogan, and then Hollywood Hulk Hogan, to have the run as a babyface and a heel, doing that, having a career as long as he did. But all the things with the Gawker trial, you know, everything that came out from there, and Hulk trying to separate Hulk Hogan from Terry Bollea and not being able to do that. And, you know, again, it becomes a very, very complicated legacy very quickly. The character Hulk Hogan, yes, is immortal. The immortal Hulk Hogan is how they introduced him in WWE the last handful of times that he's made appearances. But when you break down him getting down to who Terry Bollea is, that's when it becomes complicated.
So I watched Hulk Hogan as a kid in the AWA wrestling for Vern Gagne. In the early 80s, and Hulkamania actually started in Minneapolis with Vern Gagne's AWA. This is Hogan in his turquoise trunks at the time, and he's battling Nick Bockwinkel to try to be the AWA champion. And of course, during that time, there's so many disqualification matches, and Hogan was never able to capture that championship because Vern just kept, you know, going through the Midwest and other places to be able to showcase that match. Bockwinkel's the champion, Hogan chasing for the championship. When Hogan eventually left to go to Vince McMahon in the WWF, this is where Hulkamania really blew up. It was a regional thing for me as a kid growing up, but then it became a national story because Hogan was amazing on that New York WWF platform. Hulk Hogan defeats Iron Sheik, as the Sheik was a kind of a transitional champion. And Hulkamania was just amazing. It was a national brand. The start of Vince McMahon's real fortune in WWF was because of Hulk Hogan. And Hogan would take on all these challengers and go right through them. There was a time, as you guys recall, in the early 90s, where it was cool in 84, Rocket Wrestling Connection, part of WrestleMania 1, and then he's taking on these other you know, challengers, of course, the Andre the Giant match in WrestleMania 3, where he slams Andre, even though, you know, go back in wrestling history, we've seen Andre slam. Harley Race slammed Andre. So the point is, though, is that to see that in WrestleMania 3 and Pontiac Silverdome was amazing, and it set the WWE up on fire. Hogan is a huge part of that. People want to be on cards that Hogan was on. Even if he lost, even if they were at the first match, if you're on a Hogan card, you're going to get paid a lot because it was always going to be sold out. 91, 92, it starts to fade away, and that's when Ultimate Warrior starts to be the champion, and people were kind of lukewarm on Ultimate Warrior. Hogan had to get back on top, as you well know. Like, they tried. They tried with Warrior, tried with Sergeant Slaughter. They tried with Brett. But they wanted Hogan to continue to be in the mix. But I think that his legacy to me is Hulkamania, being in New York playing, you know, being able to wrestle for Vince, but also being one of the biggest heels of all time, being in the NWO and being part of that. Daytona Beach, Florida, we'll never forget, right? Who's the third man? It's Hogan. And Hogan really reset his career from being this, you know, bland, you know, played out, you know, eat your vitamins, babyface Hogan.
White bread babyface.
To a guy that was like the ultimate heel, but also a cool heel, along with Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. So his legacy is that as a babyface and a heel, he was a top guy. And we'll never forget that part of his career.
Professional wrestling isn't where it is today, Brian, correct, without Hulk Hogan. 100%. Like that's just a fact. However you feel about Hulk, like the undisputed fact is we're not here. We're probably not doing the show if Hulk Hogan and Hulkamania doesn't blow up, if he doesn't do the NWO and help wrestling A, become what it did in the 80s, and then help take it to new heights as part of the Monday Night Wars in the 90s.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And that's why when we look at this, like, we separate Hulk Hogan from Terry Bollea. Like, Hulk Hogan, the professional wrestling star that we grew up on, the reason I became a wrestling fan, like, being a young kid during that time, like, the red and yellow was it. That was something that you look at, like, oh, yeah, this is fun to watch. Hulk Hogan is still that name if someone's dismissing pro wrestling. It's like, oh, you're like a pro wrestler, like Hulk Hogan. Hogan has been in the ring forever, but that's still the name that sticks with people. I do think it's weird. The last time we will ever see him in a ring is going to be that booing at the Raw Netflix debut. And I think that's more of where Terry Bollea took over what Hulk Hogan was. And we've talked about on this show. We had opportunities to pop him on the show, and we passed because of what Terry Bollea was. But Hulk Hogan, the wrestler, the Attitude Era doesn't exist without him. Like, other companies don't exist without him. And that's something that will always have an impact on this sport that we love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, go ahead, Ed.
No, I'm just going to say, just like that, I mean, his legacy lasts forever. And even in 2025, if there's boos from the fans, there's so many that still support him because they still believe in his, you know, eat your vitamins and say your prayers and all that from 84. I mean, that's the thing. Like, people still believe in Hogan, even though that he was unpopular in some sectors of the wrestling universe. But, I mean, just think about this, Gabe, Brian. Just think about him being on the road 300 days plus a year, plus movies, sold out houses. Probably was still underpaid even during that time because he brought so much to the table.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, he's one of those athletes. It's kind of a time where it's like, man, if he was Hulk Hogan today, he'd be getting way, way top dollar. Listen, he was fine. There's no tag days for Hogan. I'm just saying that he brought so much to the table, not just for WWF, WWE, but also for WCW as well. You remember him when he first got to WCW, that wasn't great at first because people didn't want that yellow and red Hogan. He had to turn heel just so he could be able to be relevant again. I'll never forget the story about in Daytona where Hulk Hogan was at Kevin Sullivan's house. And the night before that whole thing of who's going to be the third man, he's in Sullivan's house and trying to sneak out. They had to put a chair and lock the door to make sure that Hogan wouldn't leave because he was going to leave. He goes, brother, I'd lose all my money if I turn heel. And Kevin's like, nah, brother, you got to stay here. It's going to be the greatest thing for you. And Hogan's like, I'm not sure. They locked the door to make sure that he arrived in the arena and went through with it. And it was lucrative for them as well. So what a story Hulk Hogan has been.
I mean, even TNA and Impact, like, it was a flop for the most part, him being there. But, like, them still being in business, I think part of that is that the fact they were able to pull a Hogan out there and, you know, ultimately try Mondays and things like that. But, like, that was a win for them. And still to have that impact where the WrestleManias being what they are, it's a two-night thing, it's taking over, the international thing. Like, to think about, like you said, Hood, the WrestleMania 1 and him being out there to where it is today, like, he's a big part of why that happened.
Oh. Rock versus Hogan at that WrestleMania is I mean, it's still probably one of, when WWE puts out lists and they put out, you know, WrestleMania match lists or just big, like in terms of pops from the crowd, like Rock versus Hogan is always going to be on that list. It's always going to be a huge part of that, without a doubt.
You always will remember that because of the double turn.
Right.
You know, we said this about like Bret and Austin a lot, but the double turn where both guys, both veterans go, Toronto still loves Hogan. Let's just do a turn here where you're the baby face and The Rock is the heel, and it worked out perfectly. I think that's one of his best matches, if not the best match. I mean, we can talk about Hogan Andre all we want, but that matchup resonated and it lasts the test of time. Hogan was never the greatest worker, as we well know. However, if for our younger listeners and viewers, go to watch Hogan in Japan. You want to see him actually wrestle? He was amazing. The catch-as-catch-can for a 300-pounder where you had to wrestle, do the moves, he did it. It is amazing. But he didn't have to. He, before Cena, he was the five moves of doom. And he still got over.
How does WWE handle this on TV? Because they seem to have pivoted from him over the last few months where we saw the Raw Netflix thing. We saw the react. Is this like a full show? Is it a video package?
I think he gets a 10-bell salute.
Yeah.
To start, I mean, they could do it. They might do it on SmackDown and Raw. They might do both.
Yeah.
I think they have video packages, but I think they do something throughout the entire nights on Friday and Monday. I mean, this is, again, at the age of 71. Yes, when they last time they rolled out Hulk 8 months ago.
Right.
Didn't go well.
Nope.
But it's honestly different after somebody has passed like this. You know, and you put up all the clips, like we were just talking about the body slam, him versus Rock, you know, him turning, because obviously they've got all the WCW stuff, him turning heel, like Hulkamania running wild, him in Ultimate Warrior, you know, him in Macho Man, like you put all those things in a highlight package and play them throughout the night. And hell, I mean, you could, again, separate into different like eras of Hulk Hogan of highlight packages to play him throughout the night. And again, it doesn't seem like he would. Yeah, again, I think they were separating themselves because they didn't want to have that negative reaction of when he came out there as the immortal Hulk Hogan. But after somebody passes like this, I think I don't think people are going to be booing somebody who just passed away if they put up a video package and do the 10-bell salute.
I think that now he becomes full-fledged babyface. You're right, in his passing. I think people respect the legacy of Hogan because, again, those doors are open in WWE. A lot of it is because of Hogan. It's McMahon, but also Hogan. It's the marketing genius of McMahon, but it's Hogan going through
and
wrestling hurts and executing and playing and wrestling hurts and wrestling 300 days a year. And again, the same business for WCW, the same thing. Like if you don't get Hogan Flair in Orlando, where Hogan wins the WCW championship, WCW is flat as on its ass. Because then you don't get the NWO, you don't get all the acclaim, you don't get Dennis Rodman and all these other matches that they had, Karl Malone, Sturgis, all the stuff. Like, none of this happens unless Hogan's there. If Hogan and Flair does not happen in WCW, their door closes 3 years earlier. It may not even reach the 2000, quite frankly. It was dead on its ass, WCW, without Hogan.
Also, because of that, we don't see the Attitude Era. Like, we saw how Vince operated when there was no competition. Like, he's not pushed. He can put out whatever he wants. So if WCW doesn't reach that level, WWF never reaches that level. Like, that's just sort of how it went.
100%.
Well, I think that Gabe nailed it right from the beginning, guys. It is a complicated legacy because there's a difference between you enjoying or hating, as a kid, hating Hulk Hogan. But still watching his matches versus who he's been away from the ring. And so we're a wrestling show. We keep it wrestling. One of the pillars of this wrestling that we talk about, one of the Mount Rushmore guys, is now no longer with us. So rest in peace, Hogan, for all that he did for the wrestling community.
Yep, Meltzer summed it up in his tweet. Hulk Hogan died at 71 today. He's probably the most famous pro wrestler who ever lived, and more people paid to see him perform over the course of his career than any other person, thanks to the memories.
Fair.
Couldn't say it any better. Tough to transition away, but what do we have number two this week, Brian?
Yes, on a much lighter note, Hood and I had the opportunity, SmackDown coming to Cleveland. We had an opportunity to talk to one of our friends of the show, Chelsea Green. And Chelsea, being the open book she is, always entertaining. It's our conversation with Chelsea Green. Welcome to GKW. Brian Rowitz with you. SmackDown making its way to Cleveland, visiting our friends there. And join us now, she's a friend of the show. She's always one of the stars of the show, whether it be Raw, whether it be SmackDown. It is Chelsea Green joining us here. Chelsea, appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me. I'm currently in Joshua Tree.
Oh, that is not Cleveland.
That is not Cleveland yet.
Yet, okay.
Yet. We my time to shine in Cleveland.
There you go. For you, you look back on this past year. So much has gone on in your career. For you, when you reflect, what has this last year meant to you on the professional wrestling scale?
I feel like the past 10 years have all been for this year. For 2024, 2025, 2026, like everything I've ever wanted, the trust from the creative team, a WWE championship, a singles championship, a faction, I'm traveling the world, I am booked and busy. Like that is all that we ever dream of as a wrestler. So it's been crazy, you know. It feels like it happened overnight, and then at the same time, it's been 10 years.
Right. So, you know, the saying is you don't become an overnight sensation overnight. For you, when did it click? When did you suddenly realize, wait, this is happening and all this is going what I've, you know, always thought would happen?
I would say, so I came back in 2023. I would say around mid-2024, I was like, oh, this is everything I've ever dreamed of. And, you know, like my husband reminds me that all the time. Every time I'm like, oh, I'm tired, or like, I don't want to get on this plane. He's like, babe, this is everything you dreamed of happening, you know? And so many people never get to experience this in their career. And I just feel so lucky that I get to do it. And not only, you know, get to do it like kind of with my husband, but I've got my girlfriends all there.
And then also the support, what does that mean to you? It's one thing to bust your ass in the ring and do all that, but to see the fan support, I mean, it was a few months ago, WrestleMania, like you were one of the talk of the town. You weren't even on the card. What was that? What does that mean to have that support from the fans?
It's crazy, but you know, I do have to say, like, I try not to feed into the hype, because if I fed into the hype, I'd also have to feed into the negativity. Sure. And although I have a tremendous kind of fandom and like group of people that support me, there's also a lot of people that are hoping and praying for your downfall. So I just want to make sure I stay level-headed all the time. And I think it's important that I get home and I turn wrestling off. You know, I clock out, I turn wrestling off, and I have hobbies, sure. You know?
You continue to shine. You continue to be that. You mentioned social media, though. You use it as a voice also. You're out there. You have your opinion. How is, you know, it's a cesspool, social media, generally. But how are you using it in a positive light as well?
Well, you know, I think everyone knows on social media, I really do try to speak about women's rights and the LGBTQ community. I just want to make sure that as a white cis female, I'm doing all I can to kind of like be a loud voice for the voices that don't feel like they can be loud. I grew up with people in my family who were gay, who were trans. And so I have strong ties to that community. And I just want to make sure that I'm using my voice for the good. Look, I don't believe in necessarily feeding into the political side of things. And that's what I always wanted to make clear. Hey, vote for who you want to vote for. That is not something that I need to know. However, I'm still going to support what I support, which is women's rights and actually human rights.
That makes sense.
Chelsea, last time that you were on the show, you talked about how it's really not about championships, but about telling stories. So what about how you're feeling right now about the company and where you are right now in WWE as far as storytelling?
I mean, I feel amazing because right now I am doing Raw and SmackDown. Obviously, as you've seen this past year, I've been doing a lot of NXT. So I don't know that I could ask for any more. Of course, as a creative, I always ask for more. I'm always pitching ideas. I'm always coming up with new storylines. But at the end of the day, like, I'm just happy that they're calling me in multiple times a week to entertain you, and it's not just on SmackDown. Like, that's a very, very good position to be in as a wrestler. But, you know, I'll always want to tell more stories. I'll always want to dive deeper into feuds. I'll always want to give you the most. I want to, you know, have hardcore matches and go through tables, and I want to shave my head, and I want to do a loser leaves town match. Like, all those things are on my bucket list, so I'm going to continue to push for them.
Yeah, I mean, you were in the ring with Nikki Bella one-on-one a couple weeks ago. Where did that fit on your bucket list?
That wasn't even on my bucket list because I didn't even think that that was possible.
Okay.
Like, the fact that that is now happening is such a pinch me moment. And I was, last week, I was so exhausted. I've been on the road for a couple months now with really no days off at home. And then I basically got a call from, like, my parents and my sister being like, I can't believe that you're about to get in the ring with Nikki Bella. You know, I watched her on Total Divas. This is why a lot of us wanted to be a wrestler, was because of the Bellas. So it's crazy that now I get to beat her up.
Yeah.
Chelsea, we're going to let you in on our conversation about Evolution. So we talked about on Good Karma Wrestling that we love what we saw from Evolution. We want to have more, but we also want the company to give the storytelling a little bit more breathing room. I mean, yeah. Think about it. It was Beyonce's there, Great American Bash, all the stuff that's happening. We just want it to be on an island to its own. So what'd you think of the buildup, and do you feel like Evolution will happen again?
I feel like Evolution will happen again. I feel like it's going to be sooner than 7 years from now. Fingers crossed. But I will agree with you in terms of this year has been crazy. We have basically only gone 2 weeks without a pay-per-view. Like, that, I've never heard of that. But with that being said, we're all consuming it. We're all tuning in. You know, we thought that Evolution was, that butts weren't going to be in seats. And I'll tell you what, I walked out there for that battle royal and butts were in seats. Tickets were sold. The amount of love and support that we got online was incredible. So, you know, obviously they know what they're doing, whether it's TKO or WWE, I don't know. They know what they're doing. They continue to put on these banger shows. So who am I to say that that's wrong or that we don't have enough buildup? I don't know.
And you know what, the other thing, Brian, watching that show, it didn't sound like a bunch of dudes in black shirts like we usually hear on Raw or SmackDown. You can hear the women in the crowd screaming and, like, cheering. It's like, it sounded, had a different tone than the usual shows at WWE.
So I had a meet and greet right before I went out for that battle royal, and that was the most amount of fans that were dressed up in Chelsea outfits and Chelsea hats. It was amazing. I've never seen anything like it.
You talk about those platforms. Another one coming out in less than a week, WWE Unreal on Netflix. You're part of that trailer. As someone that grew up in this business, how weird is it having the cameras back there and having the show that say, hey, let's take a peek backstage now?
I mean, you know, as a former fan, like, I loved watching Total Divas. So I would have been seated for Unreal. It's going to be interesting to be on the other side of it. You know, I was followed for 6 months, maybe more. I'm still kind of around the cameras and everything. And it's always a little bit scary letting the world in on your real life. It's a risk, and especially now with cancel culture so prevalent. But I think it's going to be really fun. I think the fans are really going to enjoy it, and I think they're going to see sides of us that they didn't know before. And that's special.
Chelsea, you're not making enough headway with the general managers on Raw or SmackDown.
So, Tell me about it.
We're going to pitch something for you. Okay. We believe that an online petition needs to happen for you to get back in the title picture. Because Aldis and our guy, it's just not happening. So how about an online petition, and we can all sign it, and that way, just kind of like, you know, 1,001 holds in this big, big sheet like Jericho, you could be able to have a bunch of people supporting you.
I like that. I'm going to take that into consideration and start writing a petition up immediately.
We are definitely in your corner. SmackDown heads to Cleveland July 25th. After she's done enjoying the sunshine of Joshua Tree, she'll head to Cleveland, and then we'll see her on Raw. We see her all over. Chelsea, really appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you guys for having me. I will see you on Friday in SmackDown.
She's just the best. She really is. I mean, between her and now and her husband, I mean, both friends of show at this point. Yeah. They've both been on multiple times, but she's fantastic. Again, I'm rooting for her to get back. She's got a secret Hervis. Like, she's got to get back in the title picture here, boys.
Yeah, we learned after the interview where Joshua Tree was.
Right. Yeah, we did learn that, yes.
Yeah, we learned it's in California. So somehow, some way, she's getting her raise, getting her son, and then she'll make her way to Cleveland, another sunny place for SmackDown.
What do we got at number three this week,
All right, sticking with WWE, we are a week and a half away from a two-night SummerSlam spectacular. Which WWE story are you most into right now?
Now time for
I think I have to
news and notes.
I think the one I'm into the most is Roman versus and not necessarily the match that they're going to have that they apparently set up on social media and then through TMZ with Heyman. But really just Roman versus Heyman. I really enjoyed them going head to head on the microphone, and then you got in there as well. You got Braun Breaker involved, but my goodness, the pop for Roman when he came out to interrupt Heyman was electric. I mean, it's just different when Roman's around. I know we wish he was around more, but he's earned the contract that he has, so he doesn't have to be. But I would say that's the one I'm into the most. That's in terms of everything that's happened in the last handful of shows, I think that's what I've enjoyed the most. The return of Roman and then Roman going head to head with Paul Heyman.
I think that could be the answer, but I think it's unfortunate that the hottest story does not involve the Universal Championship or also Gunther's Championship. That's strange, but that's just where it is right now, right? We've asked for many weeks on this show, after the Bloodline and how hot that was, what's the second act? What does Triple H do to put out there? It's like, boy, this right here is, you can never touch the Bloodline, but this will be as good and as intriguing. It's not the Judgment Day. We enjoy the women's action in WWE, but is anything hot there? Like, not necessarily a story. Like, we like Naomi as a champion, but her being crazy is not a story. Her being crazy is just increasing her persona to go up to 10 or 11, right? So I think that might be it, because we were going through this before the show, Gabe. Like, we're throwing out names, like, what's going on with Cody? And so what's going on with some of the others on the top of the card? And it's kind of simmering right now. Randy Orton, nothing there. Yep. Like, I think Jacob Fatu is interesting, but I feel like that's mid-card, not the number one thing. So I don't see anything that's really the number one hottest thing, but the closest to it is anytime that Roman's on my TV.
My only concern with the Roman thing, I wouldn't put it here, is like, if him and Jay lose, that's awesome for Braun and Bronson. Like, that continues to elevate those two. But if it's just going to end with Roman and Jay winning again, and now you're cutting out the legs from those two and Heyman's unnamed faction, like, that sort of takes away from it for me. So that's my concern there. The only story I'm really into is the Becky Bailey Lyra. I still like that still has legs. Like, even the stuff Monday where they're teaming up, like
Bailey acting like nothing happened. Like, I'm waiting for the follow up on that, because I love Bailey just like, we got a championship opportunity. You're supposed to do it at WrestleMania. Who cares what else is happening? We're wrestling. I'll see you out there. Like, clearly they're gonna have to follow up on that.
But yeah, I'm even intrigued. Becky.
Like, I love
Becky using it as ammo. Like, oh, like, Lyra's so selfish trying to win two titles. Like, you know, it's not the same when I did it. Like, there's something there, at least. To your point, Hood, yes, it's not a main event scene, but like, the options are pretty slim when we look at this.
See, this is what happens when you have the lead as a wrestling company, that you can have stuff like this that are all mid-card stuff. And, you know what? We'll have a great crowd at SummerSlam.
Right.
Oh, well, it will sell out Paris. This is what happens. Like, AEW's got to continue to go as high as they can, have the best wrestling that they can. But WWE could just have, hey, we got all the stars. Look at the stars. Like, we got disqualification finishes on SmackDown. That's okay. We'll sell out Houston. Like that's kind of taking the fans for granted, but also not really being able to have anything that's established that's red hot outside of what we saw with the Bloodline.
Those fans are still going to show up for Cody. They're still going to buy the Cena merch, even though he's a heel. Like, they're going to pop for Punk. Like, to the WWE fans, like, you don't need the five-star matches. You don't need these, like, elaborate stories.
I mean, But couldn't we have done better for a match that was already contractually obligated because of Cody winning to do a contract signing that ended with Cody signing for Cena? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if John Cena is as powerful in Hollywood as he is, just have your contract lawyers look this up. We got the video. You did not sign that, my friend. Yeah. Like, you can get out of that easy. That's easy.
By the way, I like how WWE took a shot at Pat McAfee by Cena saying, I'm really too busy. I really don't have the championship. Like, oh, taking a shot at McAfee because he's too busy, apparently, to be able to be at the booth every Monday. So I got that from Cena. Like, oh, too busy to be. I really don't want to have this matchup. But you're going to have the matchup. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, but even that, like, I guess if we get do we get a double turn? I guess that sort of becomes interesting. But, like, it's just.
If we get the double turn, but I don't know if we're actually going to get the double turn.
I agree with that. So, I don't know. It's just. Or I think the route might be, like, we joke about how illegal it was. Does Cody win and then Cena gets it voided because he didn't really sign the contract? And you do some of that stuff.
Cena wins, and then Seth Rollins cashes in, fresh off the Rich Eisen show.
Now that would be interesting.
Well, but I thought, I mean, if they're actually going to do that, Punk wins, and then he cashes in on Punk.
Oh,
either way,
that makes more sense to me because of the Rollins Punk animosity. Obviously, Punk still has a problem issue. Because he was betrayed by Paul Heyman. So you tie all that together as well.
Yeah, I think he's got options. All I know is that he won't be hosting Eisen. He's going to have to actually get in the ring at some point. Well, he got put in the trick bag, didn't he?
Yeah.
He goes that, does that injury, goes, you know, Seth, you're going to be go to LA. I got to do what? Oh, I got to explain this. Before we talk about the Cowboys, let's talk about my injury situation. Before we break down LeBron, let me tell you, I have crutches over here. I'm actually hurt.
They're swerving us, I will give them credit for that because that could be interesting. I mean, that faction, like, it wasn't anything super interesting before the injury, but at least there would be something there. I'd be into that.
Yeah, especially if at the end of it, like you said, if they, I guess it depends upon what night they're going to do Roman. I'm guessing that's night two. They're going to do that tag match. They'll do that night two.
Not in the main event spot?
No, cause Punk and I'm assuming you're gonna have main event with Punk and Gunther night one, and then Cena Cody night two.
I don't know.
Okay, well, Punk. It's gonna be either the main event or begin the show. It's gonna be one or the other. It's not a mid card match. It's for the World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, but Roman's coming back for a mid card match.
The beginning or the end?
One of the two options.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the old MJF trick, man.
Yeah.
If I'm going to lose, get me out of there early.
MJF, Brock Lesnar. I mean, this is a tale as old time in professional wrestling. But I think you could do something. If Seth does return on night one and cashes in on a Punk, and then he's around, he can then assist them to help defeat Roman and Jay. And then that faction is getting stronger coming out of SummerSlam because they've got a world champion. They've got those two. Now you can be like, oh, they won this tag match. Roman's one of the greatest champions of all time. Sets up a tag team match. And then you can, you know, potentially have those guys just absolutely stomp out Judgment Day and the tag team champions over there.
Your thoughts about Lyra and Becky and Bailey. Bailey is interesting. I think if nothing else, this is a lot about Lyra Valkyria. She's really grown up in a big way. So I like that. And so,
well, she's Bailey's had to because heel. Well, but Bailey's been doing some of the best work I think she's done as a heel. I've really enjoyed the work that she's been doing. I mean, Becky's Becky. Like, she's just going to knock it out of the park. So it's like they basically threw Lyra in the deep end and go, hey, figure it out because these two are going to carry their weight. Can you carry yours? And she has.
I guess my point about Lyra is we criticize WWE for always going with veterans.
Right.
And, you know, even The Undertaker showing up at NXT. But at least you have someone young that you're like, yep, she's the future. And I think her promo has been great. I think her in-ring action has been great.
Can you do something with whenever this is over? What are you going to do? Because I felt the same way about Zoe Stark when Zoe was doing the with her storyline with Trish, and Zoe shined. Like, it's like, oh, they got something here. And after Trish went away, Zoe went away off our televisions very shortly after that.
And I think that's why this is standing out, because like it is a young star getting put in a big spot with some veterans and actually shining. Because you assume she will win the IC title back, and then yes, does she stay on TV after that, or is it like, oh yeah, you won the title, like, oh yeah, we have that title 6 months later?
You mean like Zelina Vega?
Right.
Kind of just disappeared off our TV.
The title, right? I couldn't even tell you who the U.S. champ is. Did she drop it, or am I making that up?
No, she dropped it. But who did she drop it to?
Oh, Julia. Wow. Do not remember that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's well, she broke our guest nose. That's right.
Google had to tell me that. I did not remember that in the slightest.
When did that happen? On Main Event?
I mean, maybe, SmackDown. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, it was definitely SmackDown. But
June 27th episode of SmackDown. So a month ago, I, in my head, cannot picture Julia holding the United States Championship. I don't know what that looks like.
Nope.
Is it on speed? Is that what happened? Did it happen in 3 minutes on speed?
Did they put it on TNA somewhere? Did they?
Well, that's possible.
Where did this thing get buried? I think Brian's larger point is they just have their big stars involved, and that's all they need right now to sell tickets. That's not always going to be the case. They're going to have to pick something back up. I am curious to see how this SummerSlam goes. Because I have been of the opinion they're not hot enough to do something like this on a consistent basis outside of WrestleMania.
I agree.
You don't need two nights of this, but we're getting it anyway.
What do we have in news and notes this week, Brian?
All right, Scott DeMore on his podcast talking about the Young Bucks said they've done everything in AEW as characters and executives. And he said, quote, I could see them one day wanting a WrestleMania moment.
I don't know, because there's still too much mystery between what happened with Cody.
Right.
Do they still got a good relationship with Cody? I have no idea.
So I have not watched those Cody Rhodes podcasts. Why would I? I've seen the clips, but have they brought like with Kevin Owens and now with your buddy that you talked to at WrestleMania? Ricky Saints. Did they ever bring up the Young Bucks at all? Was there any AEW chatter at all? I don't know the answer to that.
Cody's a company guy. He's not going to bring them up.
He brought up AEW on our podcast.
Yeah, that's fair. Watching illegally, though. He's not giving them money. It's totally different.
Check out the archives. He said it to us. That's right. He did say that here. Young Bucks up in age. Okay, so who comes back first, the Hardys or the Young Bucks making their debut in WWE? Don't you feel like the Hardys have another, like, short run before they go into the Hall of Fame?
They sure hope so.
I don't see it.
See it with the Bucks. Like, there is a WWE mold and model. The Bucks aren't, like, the WrestleMania moment. Well, like, what would that be?
I think they would, like, if they could just sign up and do a WrestleMania match, I think they would. I think they look at what happens to every tag team that goes there and they're like, oh, no, I'm good.
Right. Like, we're not going to get Bucks versus Lucha Bros at a WrestleMania. You're going to get the Bucks in a 4-team ladder match that might get off the pre-show.
It would be funny one year for them to go to Gabe's favorite event. All of a sudden, they both come down for the Rumble. that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
What are those two doing here?
Dick. That'd be different.
I saw them last Wednesday. Still get a pop. They're still over. It is amazing. So, along with the Young Bucks, I think Dustin Rhodes will never wrestle in WWE again. By that time, he'll be 60. He's got a 6-year deal with AEW. Like, he's not going to put that suit on again.
No.
And be an androgynous. He won't be doing that. Also, I wrote down Alex Reynolds.
Oh, good.
Johnny TV, Cole Cabana.
Okay. Good to know.
The usual suspects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One guy we could see moving, MJF, he was on Busted Open this week, talking about Goldberg's final match. Said if Goldberg wants a proper send-off, then he should face a generational talent like MJF also reports out that Goldberg broke his hand in the Gunther match a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, not shocking. I think Goldberg's good. I think he just like because he backtracked on a lot of it, thanks Triple H. And like, again, like you got cut off, not because of WWE, but because they decided to do it on network television. Like, that's why you got cut off. Yeah, I don't know. Also, apparently, MJF was on an interview on SiriusXM talking about his ass cheeks. So apparently, if you see Happy Gilmore 2 coming out on Netflix, you're going to see his butt. So prepare yourself for that.
Katie Nolan has spoken highly of it. Oh, there goes Hood.
And
Happy Gilmore 2.
Great.
Friday night, I think. Tomorrow night that comes out. So there's that. Elsewhere in news and notes, at TNA Slammiversary.
He's just there straight up left.
TNA Slammiversary, one of their biggest crowds ever, and it was a lot of, well, NXT shining. Trick Williams, the new TNA champion, still TNA champion, JC Jane, the new TNA Knockouts champion, and we have announced Hardy's versus Dudley's yet again. D-Von Dudley says that'll be his final match.
Team 3D, you mean. Team 3D.
Sorry. Yes, them.
Even though you're working, why can't you call them the Dudleys? You're working with WWE. Why can't you do, like, the WWE can't just be like, oh, yeah, like, we're working with you. Go ahead and use the Dudleys thing, even though we own the copyright. I don't understand, but I digress.
Evan Cohen does not know that we're on the air right now, so he decided to call while we're on the air. Does he know that we're on 7 o'clock Eastern? Just decides to call right in the middle, just interrupting the flow. So you were saying about Slammiversary, or are you talking about Bound for Glory, right? In Lowell, Massachusetts.
Bound for Glory.
Oh, Bound for Glory. Sorry, not Slammiversary. Yes. The big TNA show this past week.
Yeah, yes. Oh, so like a B minus. I don't know if I saw it. I watched it. It was just okay. You know, the big controversy in that is that, you know, you have 7,500 people. It's your biggest house ever for TNA. And then you put the title back on Trick. And you let JC Jane be the women's champion, not only Knockouts, but NXT. It's like, so it's the biggest crowd. That crowd on Long Island wanted either for Joe Hendry to win or for
Santana.
For Santana to win, and they got neither. So they were not happy.
The TNA Impact relationship with other companies never seems to actually go their way.
No. Literally, the only thing that they had going for them was when Kenny Omega was their champ, and Kenny would show up.
But that's it. Kenny didn't work there. It's always like their best stuff is putting their belts on people that work elsewhere.
That's fair.
Well, right. And let me point this out, because no one else is pointing this out about this. Maybe you should hire some good people. Yeah. Well, there's the point right there. Here's the point. So you drew 7,500 people, your biggest crowd, right? How many people were NXT fans that were just curious?
Right.
So now you take the NXT out of it, then you draw what, 4,000? I'm just saying, like they got an incredible 2,000 people bump just because they knew AJ Styles was going to be there. AJ Styles is a WWE guy. So I'm just saying, like, all of this, like, oh, TNA is back, and like, it's cool, but yet NXT fans were there too because they were rooting for Trick to retain. So. Yeah. I just think that they made a major mistake by JC Jane winning the Knockouts. And then, so now the chase is to October.
Uh-huh.
Do you think they'll draw the same amount of people in Lowell, Massachusetts they did on Long Island? I don't think so. They're looking for 10,000 people, by the way.
Not going to happen.
Yep.
Don't think so.
That's it for news and notes.
What did you boys have for your matches of the week?
The best match on Slammiversary was Moose losing the X Division Championship against Leon Slater. That's the best match that was on the card. Like, you would think it's the main, but it wasn't. It was just okay. Trick winning. Trick is on the outside, selling his knee for like 5 minutes of the match. He rolls in, gets the pinfall, 1-2-3. The finish was not pleasing. People were booing. They were not happy with that finish because they wanted Santana to win the title. But I thought that Leon Slater, a young guy from the UK, did a really great job against Moose. And Moose is so much better than he was even 5 years ago. So good. So that was the best match I saw.
And reportedly, Moose got hurt in that match, and they had to pivot a little bit.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, that's impressive.
And didn't miss a beat. Who says no to Sheamus and Rusev for the next 10 weeks?
Oh, my God. Like, they just continue to deliver. Like, it's just the meaty men slapping meat marathon.
Is that what Rusev wanted? Like, I'm always so torn on these guys. Like, he made such a stink and, like, got out of AEW, and now he's just all right, you can wrestle Sheamus for the rest of the year. Like, it's just very odd.
I have no idea. No idea.
No,
I'm glad. Is that what he wanted? I don't know, but I'm enjoying. He's on my television. I get to see him. And those two going head-to-head has been a blast.
The match I enjoyed in Raw, even though it was a WWE ending, was Stephanie Vaquer versus Io.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. And, of course, they had to do
run-ins and this and that. Not forbid someone win a match.
Yeah, so somebody wins something clean on Raw or SmackDown.
Never.
Sami Zayn against Karrion Kross. A lot of people happy with that finish that Kross was able to win.
I mean it's interesting that Kross was able to win. I like Kross being on our show. I love the interview that Brian did. Check it out in our archives on the YouTube page. I like the character of Karrion Kross. I don't know if he's got it in the ring.
Oh boy, that's strong. Oh no.
What? I paid him like five compliments before I got to the last part. And you only hear the last part?
It's a shitty compliment sandwich.
He said it's like he's saying no offense, so you can't get offended. It's fine.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I said it.
And don't bother me, he's just a guy in the ring. I'm just looking out for you. these people love Karrion Kross. Like, I'm just saying. The best match on Wednesday night was FTR against Jet Speed.
Yep, that was amazing. Also, Tony versus Billy. Tony Storm, Billy Starks. Billy Starks is so good and so young, and more of her on TV.
Well, yes, I agree. I really like that. But also the faction that they're building with Sky Blue and Tekla and Julia Hart. I can't wait for them to kick off.
Yeah,
because I enjoyed their promo or their little vignette that they did backstage last night.
Everyone's looking forward to that except Queen Aminata.
Well, I mean, they got to get their first win. Well, they got to get their first win somewhere. And I can guarantee you the Queen will be involved.
Yeah. Yes, she's going to take the pinfall. Well, she is pissed. I saw that up close and personal last week. That look on her face, she was just like, yep, that's you.
She's getting TV time, though. That's a positive.
Yeah. Hangman Yuta, just for the story.
Okay.
Yes.
To elevate Hangman, yeah.
Well, because what I liked about it is a lot of times when they do those eliminator matches or WWE is this all the time. Like, it's somebody who has no business. Like, Yuta has no business being in a championship match. So make it a quick match. Like, show the dominance. And because Yuta's good. But show the dominance of the champion, take care of business, and advance the story. And they did.
Yep.
Very, very simple. We were just plugging it. Check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/@GoodCarverWrestling. All the different, if you missed Chelsea Green earlier today, make sure you check that out with all the other interviews that we were talking about that we have archived, youtube.com/@GoodCarverWrestling.
So for Gabe, who's in a hot car, and for Brian, this is Jonathan Hood. So long, everybody from Cheeseland, the Sunshine State, and Land of Lincoln.